Hey, everybody. Host Nora McInerney is back for season two of The Head Start, Embracing the Journey, a podcast from Ruby Studio and AbbVie. In each episode, Nora has a real conversation with real people living with chronic migraine to see how they took action to understand this disease. So jump into the conversation for season two, a show that creates a little more space for empathy and understanding in such a complicated world. There shouldn't be so much hesitation around asking questions and asking for help. So don't wait. Join The Head Start, Embracing the Journey, and learn a little bit more about life with chronic migraine. Hey, everybody. If you've been looking for love at first sight, it's closer than you think. It can be found at your local shelter. So this June 7th to June 9th, join the Pedigree Adoption Drive, and the Pedigree brand will reimburse your dog adoption fees nationwide. Pedigree knows that bringing a dog into your home not only opens their heart, it can open yours too. Visit pedigree.com/adoption-drive to learn more and see full terms and conditions. Hey, everyone. Do you live in Washington, D.C.? Are you sitting around fretting about this upcoming election? Maybe you're even working on one of these campaigns. Well, we've got a great stress reliever for you, and that's Coming Out to See Us on May 30th at the Warner Theater for Stuff You Should Know Live.
Yeah, we guarantee zero political jokes. 100% zero political jokes if you come out and see us. We're going to be in Medford, Mass on May 29th. The next night, we'll be in D.C., on May 30th, and then the night after that, we'll be at our old friend, the Town Hall, in Manhattan Town, NYC.
That's right. So check out tickets. You can go to stuffyoushouldknow.com. You can go to the theater websites themselves. Avoid those secondary ticket brokers, or check out our Linktree, right, Josh?
Yeah, Linktree/SYSK Live.
Welcome to Stuff You Should Know, a production of iHeartRadio.
Hey, and welcome to the podcast. I'm Josh, and there's Chuck, and Jerry's here, too. And when you put us all together, things get pretty great. How's it going, man?
It's going great. I've been listening to the Village People off and on all day.
Yeah, same here. Well, we're supposed to both come in.
Oh, sorry.
Chuck, did you pick this I cannot imagine that you weren't a cute little 7-year-old Village People fan.
True.
So which one did you identify with the most?
Well, I've told this story before because I posted it on Instagram way back when I talked about it. Mm-hmm. But I still have a crayon drawing of the Village People because I would sit around and play the record Cruisin'.
Okay, so their third album,
but the one with YMCA and I believe In the Navy and like most of their big hits outside of my mm-hmm. favorite Village People song, which is of course Macho Man.
Sure.
Such a good song. Yeah. And I would just sit around and listen to Cruisin' and stare at that record cover of those guys, you know, on the horse and the motorcycle and the bulldozer. And like, I would see them on American Bandstand and Solid Gold and the early music videos. And I thought they were the coolest, most awesome dudes ever in the world. And I would sit around and draw crayon pictures of them, and I still have one of them. Maybe I'll pin it on Instagram. I'm sort of always laughed years later that, like, who knows what my parents were thinking. And we'll get into the, you know, whether or not Village People count or were, in fact, a gay band. But I imagine at the time in the early to mid-70s with Southern Baptist parents, they either weren't aware of that or were probably pretty, like, worried about their son.
Right.
When they needn't be, because either way, it would have been fine.
Yeah, well put, man.
You know what I'm saying? But back in the 70s in the rural, not rural, but in the suburban conservative South, I'm sure if they did know what was going on, they were probably like, have you seen these crayon pictures? Like, he drew
the
literal.
The school counselor got in touch?
I drew literal, like, pancake boobies on the biker guy. because I didn't know how to draw like a bear chest correctly.
Right. Yeah. Hey, that works.
Yeah. So anyway, I'll either scroll through my Insta or maybe I'll figure out how to pin stuff. But
you should definitely pin it.
We were talking about village people, technically not the village people.
Yeah.
It's just sort of one of those things like Eagles or Hall & Oates where you just you come to be known by that name, even though that's not your real name.
Yes. Like Edie Brickell and New Bohemians.
Oh, is that what it is? It's not the New Bohemians?
Yeah. For some reason, I've always had this memory of her correcting David Letterman on Letterman.
That's funny.
In like 1990 or something like that. I don't know why it stuck with me, but I always, she got the point across for sure.
And Indigo Girls is the other one. They're not the Indigo Girls.
Yeah, don't even say that to their face. They will beat you up.
Well, if you say Hall & Oates to Daryl Hall, he gets pretty salty. He's like, we were not Hall & Oates. We never were.
Oh, really? What were they?
Look at the
album. The Hall & Oates?
No, every single album, it's Daryl Hall and John Oates. They were never Hall & Oates. And it just.
Does he really get salty about that? Because there are much, much greater things to be upset about.
I've seen him get a little salty, but I think it's largely because they don't like each other.
Oh, man. Why are you telling me all this?
Sorry.
I want Daryl Hall and John Oates to be like just the best guys ever.
You want to be like Hall & Oates? It's like
yeah,
PB&J.
Exactly. Wow.
Or dare I say Josh and Chuck.
I'm not participating for the rest of this episode. Right. I have to chew on some stuff.
All right. Let's talk village people.
Yeah, actually, one of the things that stood out to me is this is like the improved version of our Milli Vanilli episode. Because one thing I didn't realize is that the village people were like a manufactured band.
Yeah.
And they were the brainchild, yeah, I guess collectively.
Yeah.
Of Jacques Morali and Henri Belolo, who were both Moroccan-born Frenchmen.
Yeah.
Who, I guess, separately kind of got into the music industry by their own grit and determination and didn't really know each other at first. They had their own, I think starting in the 50s and 60s, had their own careers that they were trying to build. And eventually in the 70s, they came together. Henri Belolo was kind of like the brains, the producer, that kind of type. Jacques Morali was more, he was a producer as well, but more the hands-on creative type of producer. And when they came together, some sparks flew even before the village people were ever around.
Yeah. There's no way to say this without sounding completely like kind of stuck up, but I've been listening to a lot of French music lately.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, there's, I mean, if you're in the right mood, there, if you look up like 80s sort of new wave, but French music, their version, it is really, really awesome stuff.
Nice. I will check that out.
Yeah, highly recommended. So, yeah, they were, like you said, they were, had made a name for themselves independently. I believe in 1973, Belolo set up Can't Stop Productions a couple of years later.
That's a great name, by the way.
Oh, yeah.
It's just stuck out to me all day.
Oh, yeah. And I remember seeing their that little logo, like Can't Stop the Music. I think that was the name of the movie, right?
Yeah. I didn't put those two together, actually, until just now.
But they eventually met up in the United States, and their first project and release was a real banger. You know the song Brazil from the 1930s, the one from the movie Brazil? They took that and updated it with a female trio called the Ritchie Family as a disco song. And it is, like I said, it's a real banger, kind of a classic disco song.
Yes, but it was disco before disco actually existed. So a lot of people kind of credit these two as really helping lay the foundation for disco. It was that period right before disco became a thing. So it was a weird transition between like... what's the guy's name? Percy,
Sledge.
Is it Percy Faith and his orchestra?
Oh, okay.
The transition between Percy Faith and John Travolta. This is like that slice of music, lots of strings, kind of salsa based, lots of like chorus and vocals. It actually was up for the 1976 Grammy for Best Pop Instrumental Performance and lost to The Hustle, if that gets it across. So, like, The Hustle is like proto-disco.
Yeah.
So is this version of Brazil. And it's right before disco became a thing.
Yeah. Like, on the matter of months, though, probably, right?
Yeah, I would say that, yeah.
Okay. I mean, losing to The Hustle, there's no shame there.
No, not at all.
So they had this pretty good hit with Brazil. Again, I recommend you check it out. It's and listen to all these songs. They're all great. Can't Stop Productions was like, all right, listen, we you know, back then they would just go from thing to thing because it's not like you can ride out something like the Ritchie Family forever. So they're always looking for the next new thing. In 77, they were hanging out in Greenwich Village, New York, mm-hmm. which then, as it is now, is a very friendly community for especially gay men. Morale was gay, but Belola was not. But they were hanging out there. They were going to discos. They were going to bars and stuff. And they started to see these guys in these clubs that were dressed up as these sort of macho American stereotypes that they grew up watching on, mm-hmm. you know, American TV and American movies. And this is a direct quote from Belola. Dave is encouraging me to read it with a French accent. I'm not sure about that.
Yeah.
But I'll try. This is from Billboard magazine. We saw different types of characters in bars. Yeah. That's how we decided to create a group that will represent different characters of the American male. As we had the idea in the village, we decided to call the group the Village People. Simple.
That was a great Pepe Le Pew.
Yeah, that was it. Like, they saw these guys in bars fitting these sort of archetypes or stereotypes of what they thought like a macho American man was.
Yeah.
And they were like, hey, this is like a concept right here, right in front of us.
Yeah. And actually, it's possible that it was one specific guy they saw, Felipe Rose,
yeah.
who was known as the Indian, who dressed up as a Native American Indian around Greenwich Village.
That was his jam.
Very flamboyantly, because he was a Native American. On his father's side, he was Mescalero, Apache, Lakota, and Cherokee, which is like, that's the trifecta. And he was very proud of it. So he dressed up in like moccasins and fringe leather vests and all that kind of thing. And they saw him. And that, in addition to going to bars like the Mine Shaft, which was a BDSM gay club, and then seeing other people kind of dress up, that's where they put the whole thing together. And Dave made a really good point here that whole concept of dressing people up as like stereotypical American male macho like images mm-hmm. essentially, that an American producer probably would have been like, that's not a great idea, it's kind of lame. But these guys were like looking at America from the outside in, and I think like you kind of alluded to, they were exposed to this like their whole lives. This is like what they were fed through American movies and TV. So to them, they were like, this is amazing, what a great idea, like we want to celebrate this American macho male. And that's where the Village People came from.
Yeah, I'm not so sure about that part, but I respect Dave's opinion. And if you agree with him.
I do agree with him on that.
I respect
one.
You both.
I'm going with Dave on this one.
I bet there are American producers that were like, oh, God, it's right there in front of my face. Can't believe I didn't think of that.
Yeah, yeah. In hindsight.
So Morale started writing songs. You know, like you said, they were inspired by Felipe Rose. I don't think you said he was basically kicked out of his house because he came out as gay. Mm-hmm. So he was hanging out in the village, working in bars and stuff. The Ritchie family was, you know, they were trying to wring that thing dry from the Ritchie family. They were getting a new album together. They needed some backup singers. And someone said, hey, there's this guy. He's on Broadway right now in The Wiz. His name is Victor Willis. The guy mm-hmm. can really sing. He's got a lot of personality, can dance a little bit. You should bring him in here as a backup singer. Morale brought him into the studio and was like, dude, you are a star, so we need to get you to record these other songs we've written. That there were no Village People yet,
right.
But in 1977, he cut their very first disco hit, and you'll see a lot of parentheticals because that was the time, but this mm-hmm. is called San Francisco, parentheses, You Got Me.
Right.
Another good song.
So, yeah, Victor Willis was the first. This is long before Felipe Rose came along, but after they had seen Felipe Rose, right?
Yeah.
So they were inspired to create the Village People, but Victor Willis was really the only Village person at the time. Everybody else was just studio session musicians and singers and stuff like that, right? So that worked fine when they
yeah.
cut that first album, which I think was like four songs or something like that. And they had that hit with San Francisco, You Really Got Me. And with that hit,
you
they're like,
me.
Okay, You got me, San Francisco.
Yeah.
Which is funny because, as we'll see later on, Victor Willis would become a fugitive from the law and he would finally be arrested in San Francisco.
Yeah.
So he was the Village People. And now that San Francisco You Got Me was a hit, like apparently an international club hit, they needed more people. And so they started looking for other Village People. And the first one they recruited was Felipe Rose, appropriately enough, because apparently he was unknowingly the inspiration for the whole thing.
Right. Funny enough, they were San Francisco You Got Me was big in Australia. As you'll see, that's become a recurring thing. Seems like Australians love the Village People.
Yeah.
So I'm curious to hear from them. That if you look at that first album cover, it is not the Village People. And I don't even think Victor Willis is on the cover. It's just, it's a bunch of guys. There is a guy wearing a Native American headdress, but I don't think it's Felipe Rose.
No, none of them are.
There's a flannel shirt, hard hat guy, mm-hmm. and there is a biker, but that's it. Just those three sort of Village People that we went on to know and love. Everyone else is just a bunch of guys standing around in T-shirts looking tough with a motorcycle in frame.
Yeah. I mean, so they had the concept. They just didn't have the people yet. So they're slowly starting to assemble this. Now they have Victor Willis and Felipe Rose. They've got the first two. And they actually put an ad in the paper. I would guess the Village Voice. Looking for gay men, singers and dancers with mustaches to basically audition for the roles in this band. Not like, can you play the bass? Can you play the drums? But do you have a mustache and are you good looking and a singer and dancer? And they got, from what I saw, like thousands of replies.
Yeah, they were never a band. It was always just supposed to be a singing group. And they did. I believe Glenn Hughes, who was the biker, he worked at the Brooklyn Battery Tunnel collecting mm-hmm. tolls, mm-hmm. Saw the ad. By his memory, the ad said, seeking gay singers and dancers, very good looking and with mustaches.
That probably wasn't hard to find at that time.
Well, all his friends were like, Glenn, that's you, buddy. Like, you need to get in there.
Yeah. So Glenn Hughes became the Village People's leather man, which apparently was not a stretch for him. I think he was already into leather at the time. So he became the leather man slash biker, right?
That's right. He was the third. I think the second one to join up was Alex Briley, who came at Victor Willis's recommendation. He was the original stereotype for him was he was the athlete, but then they changed that pretty quickly to the Army guy. He was the GI and also the Navy sailor. So he kind of crossed over the different armed services, I guess.
Yes. And then another guy who responded to the ad was David Hodo. He had just gotten done with a musical about the Grand Ole Opry and basically went out for the cowboy. They're like, nope, you're a construction worker through and through. A guy named Randy Jones became the cowboy. And so you have Victor Willis, Felipe Rose, Alex Briley, Randy Jones, David Hodo, and Glenn Hughes, which, by the way, I realized earlier today that I could rattle off the names of the original Village People now. But that's who the Village People were at first. And I say we take a break because now we've got this murderer's row of mustachioed, generally gay guys ready to hit the disco scene, and they're about to blow up.
Hey, everybody. We want to talk to you about LinkedIn because LinkedIn isn't just a job board. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals that you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role.
Yep. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place.
On LinkedIn, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Hire professionals like a professional on LinkedIn.
Yep. So post your job for free at linkedin.com/SYSK23. That's linkedin.com/SYSK23 to post your job for free. Terms and conditions apply.
Change.
Hey, everyone. Host Nora McInerney is back for season two of The Head Start, Embracing the Journey, a podcast from Ruby Studio and AbbVie. In each episode, Nora has real conversations with real people living with chronic migraine to see how they take action to understand the disease.
That's right. Recognizing how a migraine attack can change the course of your day, she unpacks each guest's journey and how they talk to their doctors to find the treatment plans that are right for them.
Yep, along with headache specialist Dr. Christopher Ryan and other special guests, Nora speaks to these incredible people who've channeled their feelings of isolation in their chronic migraine journey into advocacy and art. Plus, there are also 8 episodes of their first season available for you to binge.
So jump into the conversation for season 2, a show that creates a little more space for empathy and understanding in such a complicated world. There shouldn't be so much hesitation around asking questions and asking for help. So don't wait. Join The Head Start, Embracing the Journey, as they learn a little bit more about life with chronic migraine.
Hey there, are you thirsty? Well, before you take a sip, have you stopped to think about what's in your water? Many conventional bottled waters contain PFAS, harmful substances known as forever chemicals. But you can drink water as clean as nature intended.
Richard's Rainwater collects 100% pure, refreshing drops of rain. Yes, it really is rain, everybody. This rain is caught clean before it hits the ground or becomes polluted with pesticides and contaminants commonly found in groundwater.
Yep, that means no added fluoride, no chlorine, no forever chemicals, no microplastics, no nothing.
And you can enjoy the clean taste of Richard's still rainwater and the long-lasting cold-pressured bubbles of Richard's sparkling rainwater. Just visit richardsrainwater.com to find a retailer near you. That's richardsrainwater.com. And we even have a special offer, don't we, Josh?
Yeah, text STUFF to 2512928887 and you'll get $2 off a 12-pack case of Richard's rainwater. Sip the sky.
All right, so we're back. We have our village people assembled. I think we failed to mention earlier that Dick Clark and American Bandstand, the TV show, had already sort of reached out after they had San Francisco, You Got Me as a hit. But they were like, there is no village people yet. We can't just, you know, send one guy out there. So they got these other guys together. And in December of 1977, they appeared for the first time on American Bandstand. I could not for the life of me find this exact performance. I couldn't find it anywhere. They were on quite a few times, but I never saw the one from 77 somehow. But that was their American, you know, TV debut and debut to the world when they sang San Francisco, or I guess lip synced, the song In Hollywood, parentheses, Everybody is a Star.
Yep. And you're right. Parentheses were a thing back then. I just died in your arms tonight.
Is that a real one?
Yeah. Remember we talked about it a few weeks ago, that Cutting Crew song.
I just didn't know if you fooled me then or not.
No. It's legit. Okay. Have you been walking around wondering that?
Yeah, for 3 weeks.
So we're on to your favorite song, Chuck, which I agree. I think it's the best Village People song, Macho Man. Ugh. And that was in their second album. So their first album, like you said, was called Village People. It came out in 1977. Their second album came out in 1978. And that was the one, the album was called Macho Man, and the big single from it was called Macho Man as well.
Is it okay if we read some of the lyrics to some of these songs?
Yes, I saved them too.
Oh, you did? Okay.
I think you should sing them.
Not going to sing them. Okay. Although it might be hard not to, and I'm not going to read them all because there's that intro, that great intro to Macho Man when they're going, you know, body, body, and he's going, want to feel my body, such a thrill, my body, want to touch my body.
Sure.
That's all that long intro. And then here are some of the words to the verse. Every man wants to be a macho man, to have the kind of body always in demand. Mm-hmm. Jogging in the mornings, go man, go. Workouts in the health spa, muscles grow. You can tell a macho man, he has a funky walk. His Western shirts and leather always look so boss. Funky with his body, he's a king. Call him Mr. Ego, dig his chains. Every man ought to be a macho man to live a life of freedom. Machos make a stand. Have your own lifestyle and ideals. Possess the strength of confidence. That's the skill.
But it's so if you dig into that last bit, this song goes from essentially just total body worship and like working out at the spa and all that stuff and how everybody wants to be a macho man to essentially like the last verse is about gay liberation and basically coming out of the closet, it sounds.
Have your own lifestyles and ideals, possess the strength of confidence. Yeah,
mm-hmm. I would say exactly. So. Exactly. Yeah, so it really takes like a sudden turn there because it's like the most superficial, vain song of all time. Mm-hmm. And then it suddenly like kind of is a shout out for gay liberation.
Yeah, like owning it.
This was like, it's kind of tough to wrap your head around here in 2024. Sadly, it's not as tough as it should be, but it's still tough to wrap your head around just how big of a deal it was for men to be like on stage singing songs gay. Like, I'm gay, everybody. There's just no question about it. I'm a gay person.
Yeah.
That was a big, big deal at the time. And then to sing about it and to sing about how that was a good thing, that was really daring. And it was really, it's neat that they did that. Like, it just should not go unnoticed or unmentioned. And it's hard to overstate what a big deal it was. And then it's even harder to overstate how huge of a hit Macho Man was for the Village People.
Yeah. I mean, little 7-year-old Chuck in Stone Mountain, Georgia, dancing around in the shower to that song.
Yeah.
Like, it truly reached every corner if that was what was going on. They went out on the road, which is not something that a lot of disco acts did, that disco wasn't known as a great, like, sort of live touring thing.
Well, it was like, we talked about in our disco episode, it was a really anonymous type of music. Like, you might have never see a picture of the person who's your favorite, you know, who sang your favorite song at the time.
Yeah, so, there were some package things here and there, but generally going on the road as a disco act wasn't a very big thing to do. Mm-hmm. But the Village People did it from the start. And Dave dug up this thing from the Washington Post in 79 that said that their first tour had, you know, usual stage and equipment problems. But also the group was forced to endure all manner of verbal and physical abuse from the audience, which means that people were either dragged there or went there to boo like a hate watch.
Yeah.
Which is crazy.
It is crazy, but I mean, we're talking 1979, you know?
I guess so, but like to spend your $6 or whatever right. to like, hey, we're going to go down to Madison Square Garden and boo the Village People. Like, I don't know. I guess that was a thing.
Yeah, I'm sure that was a thing, but I think more often than not, they were just loved. I read a quote from Glenn Hughes, the leather man, who said he basically had to beat back women.
Yeah.
Who wanted to sleep with him.
And he's like, I got a headache.
Yeah, he said, I have a headache tonight. So apparently some people just didn't get it. Some people didn't care. Other people did get it and cared one way or another. But they were huge. I think for the most part, people were either not reading into it or just purposefully being obtuse and looking past it. I'm not sure. But they were enormous. You mentioned Madison Square Garden. They definitely played Madison Square Garden. They were in the Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade in 1978. They were huge, but if you look back on when they were huge, it apparently lasted 22 months, less than 2 years, but they were at the top of the heap during that time.
Yeah, because, you know, disco, and again, we like Josh mentioned, we had one of our favorite episodes was on disco many years ago.
Yeah, it was great.
It was, you know, not a flash in the pan, but it was a pretty brief stay. And, you know, I guess we should get into this whole notion of whether or not Village People were, you know, a quote, gay group. End quote. Because that's always been a question. Like, you know, when I was a kid, I believe people finally started telling me, like, you know, those guys are all gay. And I don't know if it was, I'm not sure how common knowledge, because pre-internet, any of the real truth was back then. Randy Jones, who was the cowboy, said, we didn't start as a gay group and not everyone in the group was gay. That's an incorrect notion. So much of our music was played in black, Latin, and gay underground clubs, though. That's where the first Village People album found its initial audience. Mm-hmm. Victor Willis, who, you know, to a lot of people kind of was and is the Village People because he was the super, super talented Broadway guy. He was the guy that co-wrote a lot of their big songs, was not just sort of a backup singer.
He was the cop.
He was the cop as the front man, and he was not gay. He was, in fact, for 4 years married to Felicia, at the time, Felicia Ayers Allen, who would later become Felicia Rashad, the wife on The Cosby Show is what she's most well known for. Mm-hmm. But they were in The Wiz together on Broadway and then eventually got together to make music with Morali. I think they got together to write a concept album for her called Josephine Superstar about the life of Josephine Baker, which I haven't heard, but I'm going to try and find that.
If it's in French, it's really going to knock your socks off. Huh?
Yeah, but so Victor Willis was not gay. He was the frontman and lyricist. Right. But like they had songs about Fire Island and San Francisco and
Key West,
Greenwich Village and Key West. And if you look at the lyrics, like it's pretty clear that like the stuff was either coded for gay or just basically like if you don't know what we're talking about, then you're pretty dense.
But if you were even remotely hip and you read some of like the contemporary or contemporaneous articles on them, like all the journalists wanted to know, like, are you gay?
Right.
Like I read a New Music Express article from like, I think 1978. And the guy's asking Randy Jones, the Cowboys, like, are you a gay group? And apparently Randy Jones was sick of hearing this at the time.
Yeah.
And it was barely containing his anger. And he's like, why does it matter? He's like, we're not a gay group. We're a disco group.
Right.
But over time, they definitely evolved into a gay group. I think it kind of occurred to them like what a huge impact they were having just by basically being ambassadors of gayness to the rest of the world and showing everybody like, you like our music, you know, like us too.
Yeah.
Maybe like the gay dude that you work with.
Exactly. And that's what I think Victor Willis as the straight lead singer, and this is touching on YMCA, which we'll get into, but he said, you know, I wrote those lyrics, so technically it's not a gay song because I'm not gay and I wrote it, but I never had any qualms that it was embraced by the gay community.
Yeah, he's like, not that there's anything wrong with that.
Yeah, basically. So on the other hand, the Hodo, the construction worker, says, I mean, look at us. We were a gay group. The song was written to celebrate gay men at the YMCA, was it? Mm-hmm. Yes, absolutely. And gay people loved it. YMCA was, you know, it's the song. I think Macho Man is a much better song, but YMCA is became part of the cultural zeitgeist like forever.
Yeah. I saw somewhere, I couldn't find it, but that it's in a time capsule in orbit around Earth right now. It was included in like a bunch of songs that was sent out into space.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
It's a huge hit. Like that's just, yeah, it's part of American culture, I guess international culture, really. But the idea behind it is that Randy Jones, the cowboy, when he moved to New York in 1975, one of the first things he did was join the YMCA on West 23rd Street in Manhattan, which became the inspiration for the song YMCA because he took Jacques Morali to the YMCA with him to work out with some of his buddies who apparently were gay adult film stars. And Jacques Morali was just blown away that there was this place.
Amazing.
Yeah. It's like this secret, hidden gay oasis.
Yeah.
On the cheap, right? Like it costs almost no money to not only like work out there, but get a room there
too.
Yeah,
you could stay there at the time.
So apparently he was just starstruck at the whole idea and loved going to the YMCA and decided to write a song about it. So he wrote the bones of YMCA. And then Victor Willis came in and wrote kind of the rest of it. But the whole idea behind YMCA is that it was an ode to just the gay experience at YMCA. And Victor Willis, though, he wrote a lyric that I hadn't noticed until I was listening to it yesterday, where he's talking about how just he arrived in this new city and he was very unhappy about being there. Uh-huh. He said, I thought the whole world was so jive.
I never noticed so jive.
Like he just didn't like anything. He thought the whole world was jive until he discovered the YMCA and realized that this place was awesome and amazing. And the world in turn was pretty amazing too. I had never heard that lyric before or noticed it. And
yeah.
When I did, I just thought that was so great.
That's a great lyric. Mm-hmm. If you look at the original music video, it has a close-up shot of the McBurney YMCA at the very beginning there on West 23rd. And it's basically just a video of them dancing in the street outside of it.
Yeah.
As far as the YMCA hand gestures, They did not create that. If you look at that video and basically any performance of them doing it, on the Y, like, you know, it builds up, da, 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 it's fun mm-hmm. to play. And they go, they throw their arms up on Y.
Yeah.
And what they're doing is they were just kind of throwing their arms up in unison right. as like a dance move, but it sort of looked like a Y. And as Randy Jones tells it, that it was a live performance where some of the audience, like, just started doing the, you know, the Y and then the MCA, and the audience sort of started it.
Yeah, when they threw their arms up, the audience mistook that as like the beginning of them spelling out Y with their arms, and they took it from there. And so some kids on American Bandstand are the ones who actually came up with the YMCA dance.
Yeah, and Hodo said, here's the quote, "When I saw the movements, I thought, wow, this is so stupid. Then everyone in America started doing it, and I thought, wow, this is so brilliant."
Yeah, it's pretty awesome. And the YMCA itself, apparently, remember, this is not a time where everybody's like, hey, gay is great. The YMCA was like, you can't use our name like that.
Right.
It's trademarked. And I guess got in touch with Casablanca Records, which was producing the Village People at the time. And it just petered out. It just went nowhere. They ultimately decided not to. I think they kind of concluded it was actually way better press to just leave it as is, and that they risk getting terrible press for suing the Village People for singing how great YMCA is. So
yeah.
They just left it.
I think in the movie version, it would be like, the head of the YMCA is on the phone to the record company.
Mm-hmm.
And right before he goes to tell them that he wants a cease and desist letter drawn up, some kid, you know, some low-level worker busts in the room and goes, "Boss!" And he comes up to the phone, "Memberships are through the roof!"
That's right.
And then it just, you know, no, never mind, this is all good.
Yeah, he's like, wrong number.
So before we break, we'll talk quickly about the fact that you cannot go to a baseball game anymore without hearing YMCA, like a Major League Baseball game.
Especially the Yankees.
Especially the Yankees. That all started at spring training in Tampa. I'm not sure if the Yankees are still there, but that was their home at least at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And in 1996, this did not happen in the 70s. It was in the mid-90s, top of the fifth inning. The grounds crew came out to take care of the infield like they always do midway through the game. And they broke into the YMCA, you know, spelling out those letters
right.
as the song played, and everybody thought it was the best thing ever, and that's how it was born. It was transferred to the new Yankee Stadium, and then it just became a thing.
Yeah, you can hear Larry David as Steinbrenner ordering them to get yeah. the YMCA dancers in the grounds crew.
Yeah, totally.
But yeah, I saw a video of it from a Yankees game, and they're just out there doing like the raking like normal. And then YMCA's playing like it's just playing as a song for the crowd. And then all of a sudden when it gets to the YMCA, they just drop their rakes and start dancing. And then when that's done, they pick up their rakes and go back to work. It's pretty great.
It is.
You want to take that break you promised?
Let's do it.
Okay. We'll be right back. Hey everyone, host Nora McInerney is back for season 2 of The Head Start, Embracing the Journey, a podcast from Ruby Studio and AbbVie. In each episode, Nora has real conversations with real people living with chronic migraine to see how they take action to understand the disease.
That's right. Recognizing how a migraine attack can change the course of your day, she unpacks each guest's journey and how they talk to their doctors to find the treatment plans that are right for them.
Yep, along with headache specialist Dr. Christopher Ryan and other special guests, Nora speaks to these incredible people who've channeled their feelings of isolation in their chronic migraine journey into advocacy and art. Plus, there are also 8 episodes of their first season available for you to binge.
So jump into the conversation for season 2, a show that creates a little more space for empathy and understanding in such a complicated world. There shouldn't be so much hesitation around asking questions and asking for help. So don't wait. Join The Head Start, Embracing the Journey, as they learn a little bit more about life with chronic migraine.
Change. Hey there, are you thirsty? Well, before you take a sip, have you stopped to think about what's in your water? Many conventional bottled waters contain PFAS, harmful substances known as forever chemicals. But you can drink water as clean as nature intended.
Richard's Rainwater collects 100% pure, refreshing drops of rain. Yes, it really is rain, everybody. This rain is caught clean before it hits the ground or becomes polluted with pesticides and contaminants commonly found in groundwater.
Yep, that means no added fluoride, no chlorine, no forever chemicals, no microplastics, no nothing.
And you can enjoy the clean taste of Richard's still rainwater and the long-lasting cold-pressured bubbles of Richard's sparkling rainwater. Just visit richardsrainwater.com to find a retailer near you. That's richardsrainwater.com. And we even have a special offer, don't we, Josh?
Yeah, text STUFF to 2512928887, and you'll get $2 off a 12-pack case of Richard's rainwater. Sip the sky. Hey everybody, we're here to tell you about Viator, a tool that you can use to plan and book travel experiences around the world.
That's right. The Viator app and website make it easy to explore 300,000 plus travel experiences so you can discover what's out there no matter where you're traveling or what you're interested in.
Yep, Viator can help you plan better travel experiences. 300,000 plus travel experiences to choose from means you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy.
That's right. You can also enjoy real traveler reviews to get insider information from people who've already been on the experience that you're considering. Plus, you get free cancellation that helps you plan for the unexpected.
Yeah, and Viator offers 24/7 customer service, so you know you'll get support at any hour if things aren't going as planned. So download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find the perfect travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator. Okay, Chuck, so we've hit Macho Man, YMCA. I think it's time for In the Navy, which was their last big hit, their last big single. It came out in 1979. That was on the album Cruisin', which I guess YMCA was as well, right?
Yeah, that was the one that I had.
So that was their third album, second album in 1978. These guys released two albums in 1 year.
I thought it was all three. Was it just two?
Two.
Okay.
No, the first one was 1977. Macho Man and Cruisin' came out in 1978. And then there was whatever the third of. No, I guess it was three. There's three singles, four albums. So I'm missing an album. But that album came out in 1979, the fourth one.
Yeah, that last album was Go West.
Yes, which, by the way, I always thought that was a Pet Shop Boys song because it was on their album Very from the 90s. And I was listening to Village People and came across that and was like, oh, I never realized it was a Village People song.
Okay, I actually had this album too now that I'm seeing the cover. Because it's basically them on a, well, clearly a green screen, but like a tropical island setting.
Mm-hmm.
And that had In the Navy on it. So I think I'm just getting those confused because I had both records.
Sure.
But can we read a little bit of In the Navy?
Yes.
All right. Here we go, everybody. In the Navy mm-hmm. by Village mm-hmm. People. Where you can find pleasure, search the world for treasure, learn science, technology, where you can begin to make your dreams all come true, on the land or on the sea, where you can learn to fly, play in sports and skin dive, study oceanography, sign up for the big band, or sit in the grandstand, where your team and others meet, in the Navy. And that's yeah. when it starts that great chorus.
And then weirdly, at the end of the song, they're singing like the In the Navy part over and over again. And Victor Willis is... I guess singing about how he doesn't want to join the Navy. And at one point he goes, but I'm afraid of the water.
Yeah.
And it's hilarious. It's like purposely funny. And that really kind of, to me, captures like what the Village People were doing. Like they were balancing like really good disco music with high camp, right? I mean, these guys were dressed up as just macho stereotypes with like genuinely funny lyrics sometimes. And I think that really kind of captured it for me. I saw that in that New Music Express article, the author said that they were experts at balancing what is deft and what is daft.
Can I read verse 2?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Sorry. I didn't know you were.
Oh, no, that's right. I think it works better to split it up so people can just fully absorb. Okay. If you'd like adventure, don't you wait to enter the recruiting office fast. Don't you hesitate. There is no need to wait. They're signing up new seamen fast. Maybe you're too young to join up today, but don't you worry about a thing, for I'm sure there will be always a good Navy protecting the land and sea. And there's another, you know, line in the chorus about, you know, you can protect the motherland. Like, it is a legit Navy recruitment song.
Yeah.
So much so that the Navy said, you know what? We'd like to actually use this for recruitment. And in exchange, we will let you film your music video aboard. Like, we'll completely help you out and not charge you money. We'll give you all the Navy seamen that you want as background actors and stuff. And you can shoot it above aboard our active ship, the USS Reasoner. And that's what they did. They said, all right, great. We got a lot of production value here. You can use it as a official recruitment song.
Yeah. That, I mean, that's just amazing. That, like, that's just crazy. But that's what happened. Apparently the Navy, any ship that had a closed circuit TV system got that video and I guess would play it over and over again, which, I mean, luckily it's a good song and it's an interesting video.
Yeah.
I was at a Dunkin' Donuts the other day. And they had the Super Bowl Ben Affleck, Jennifer Lopez commercial on loop.
Oh boy.
And everyone inside were completely out of their minds.
I bet.
It was an awful, awful scene. Terrible place to be.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh man. Yeah.
So what I'm saying is I don't think that would have happened on board those Navy ships because it was a pretty good song.
Yeah. And I think their actual recruitment did like increase supposedly while the song was out and being used. I think the American military was maybe like my parents. They weren't like, wait a minute, what song are we using and by what band as active recruitment for our U.S. military?
Right.
But, you know, I'm glad they were daft enough to not recognize that, I guess.
Right. Well, the other thing about it is I didn't see a single kind of gay innuendo lyric in that song. It was more just a gay group singing about being in the Navy, which, you know, coded for there are plenty of like gay dudes in the Navy secretly at the time. And I'm sure still are, but I'm sure it's much less secret. So I think that's more what it was than it being like a gay song.
Sure.
It was, like you said, a straight up like promotional song for the Navy.
Yeah, it doesn't say in the Navy you can maybe meet your next husband.
Right, right, exactly. You know? That got cut.
Yeah, that lyric got cut.
So that was, like we said, the last big hit. It was in 1979. And I alluded earlier, I think I just said outright, didn't even allude to it. They had a 22-month run. Just burned white phosphorus hot during those 22 months. I saw that both Madonna and Michael Jackson opened for them while they were on tour during this time. My guess would be 1978.
Wow, Michael Jackson surprises me.
Yeah, because he was already like famous from the Jackson 5.
Yeah.
But I mean, that goes to show you just how crazy huge the Village People were for a time.
Yeah.
And this is before Michael Jackson himself was like just the world's biggest star. Yeah. But yeah, it still says quite a bit. And they kept it going. They kept trying to go with it and they released a movie, as you do. Like you said earlier, it's called Can't Stop the Music.
Very bad.
I can't even make it through the trailer.
No, it's bad.
It's well known as like one of the worst movies of all time. Just a disco fluffball that keeps hitting you in the head over and over again. Steve Guttenberg is the star.
Yeah, Goots.
The whole thing is kind of like a fictitious or fictionalized version of the story of how the Village People came to be. So he plays an Americanized, fictionalized version of Jacques Morelli. His name is Jack Morel in it. And again, he roller skates everywhere and finally puts together this group that became the Village People. And it was so bad that apparently it inspired the Razzie Awards, right?
As the story goes, it was helped create the Razzies and was the inaugural Worst Picture and Worst Screenplay winner in 1980. You know where it was a modest hit, though?
I do.
Australia.
I think that's where they made just the tiny amount of money that they made back. That's where they made it back.
I guess so. I would love to hear from some Aussies of a certain age that could testify as to whether or not this is true.
I would love to hear that as well.
Yeah, so we'll find out.
Yeah, I think the guy, one of the guys who created the Razzies, the Golden Raspberry Awards, mm-hmm. which for those of you who don't know, it's like for the worst movies of the year, they hand these out. He went and saw a 99-cent double feature of Can't Stop the Music in Xanadu and wanted his money back. That's Xanadu. How bad he thought that movie was. Xanadu was great. He clearly was not talking about Xanadu. He must have just completely been focused on Can't Stop the Music.
When was the last time you saw Xanadu?
Not that long ago.
Okay.
I love it. It's also got a great soundtrack, too.
It does. I mean, this was the time when they were making these big sort of movie musical, like pop music movies.
Yeah.
It was a strange time.
And everyone was on roller skates.
Yeah. You know, none of them had were the best plotted, you know, and they were just were what they were, which was, can we get someone into the movie theater that likes this music?
Yeah. And roller skates.
After disco, Village People did try their hand at new wave, because that's what came next.
So bad.
It did not work out. Victor Willis left the band in 1979, and this is where the story gets, you know,
sad.
I guess sad in one way, or just a little confusing, because Victor Willis, who a lot of people say Victor Willis was Village People as the leader, as the original singer and songwriter. But he left, had many, many run-ins with the law, awful, awful drug problems, many warrants out, and, you know, for illegal firearms and cocaine possession and stuff like this, kind of over and over and over. Kept getting second chances from sympathetic judges that were like, hey, listen, you know, you got a lot to offer the world. Can you get yourself clean? In the meantime, Ray Simpson, Sugar Ray Simpson, took over as lead singer. And for 30 years, an all new Village People save Felipe Rose and Alex Briley as the Indian and GI, mm-hmm. toured and played, sold out cruise ships and county fairs, all over the country and world for 30 years without Victor Willis.
They would do 280 shows a year.
Yeah. I mean, very successful touring, nostalgia touring group, but without Victor Willis.
Yeah, and Victor Willis was not very happy about that. So he'd been, again, you said he had huge, huge self-inflicted problems and run-ins with the law. He was on an episode of America's Most Wanted once because he kept skipping bail.
I know.
At the same time, he definitely had been taken advantage of by Can't Stop the Music Productions early on. He'd only gotten less than $2,000 an album. Even back in 1978, that wasn't that much money for something that was just super mega hits.
Mm-hmm.
He got 1.5% of Village People royalties for the songs that he co-wrote. He wrote significant portions of these songs.
Oh, yeah.
And like you said, to a lot of people, he was the Village People. So there was a point in time where the Village People were playing the San Mateo County Fair, and a mile away, Victor Willis was in the San Mateo County Jail.
Yeah.
Probably could hear at least a little bit of it from his jail cell, right? So it was pretty bad. And apparently the lowest point came in 2008 when they got a star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame.
Yeah, I looked this up, and apparently they've edited out anything because I watched sort of the whole ceremony. But apparently Willis was in the crowd in that cop uniform, yelling and screaming and talking about how it was fake and caused a disruption. So I don't know if they just got him out of there and did the ceremony or if they edited the thing out, but it is not in the YouTube video. But what is evident when you're watching that YouTube video, no disrespect to these guys,
mm-hmm.
but those aren't the Village People.
No.
When you watch those guys, you're like, those aren't the guys. You know, there's not the guys I drew in crayon.
It's kind of like if you see a guy dressed like the Incredible Hulk. You're like, that's not the Hulk. He represents the spirit of the Hulk. And in the same way, these people represented the spirit of the Village People. They were there to accept the award in honor of the Village People. I hope they realized that that's what they were doing.
They didn't even mention Willis, though. They were listing off names, and no one said Victor Willis's name.
Yeah, there were a lot of sour grapes, I think. And so Willis actually took Can't Stop Productions to court.
Oh, yeah.
And in a really rare, unusual turn, he won big time, as a matter of fact. They went from giving him 1.5% of royalties to 50%.
Totally.
I didn't see. Did he get back royalties?
I don't know. I was really curious about that.
Because he became probably something close to a billionaire overnight if they did. And then he this to me where I was like, I wish this hadn't happened. They also gave him full control over the Village People, like name and likeness, the name of the band, the whole intellectual property that was the Village People.
You feel bad for the other guys?
Yes.
Yeah.
That's so wrong. They kept the thing going for decades.
Yeah.
And what did he do?
Well, I mean, he started playing shows as Village People with, you know, an entirely set of new guys behind him.
He fired them. He fired some of the original Village People. Like you said, I think it was Alex Bradley,
Felipe Rose,
and Ray. He was not the original, but he came in so closely after Victor Willis did. He was, as, for all intents and purposes, an original.
But he was the cop. What are you going to just say, all right, now put on the GI uniform?
Sure. And Alex Bradley would be like, I'm the GI. So
right.
it probably would have gone back and forth for a little while. He could have accommodated them. Instead, he was like, you guys are out. And I don't know that they had anything to do with the decision to you know, mess over Victor Willis. And yet he took his angst and anger out on them. And I thought that that was wrong.
Yeah, I don't know enough of the story to judge it because I don't know how they treated him when he was down and out. So,
well, that's the best way to judge a story.
I'm gonna just reserve my judgment on this one. I do think it's a shame that they couldn't get the original group back together for at least a show, because when I saw the what I considered the not real Village People performing online, yeah. I was like, this isn't right. And then when I saw Victor Willis and those guys he got together, I was like, well, this isn't right either.
Right.
You know?
Yes.
I wanted the gang back together. I wanted all my gay friends that I gazed upon and drew in crayon. I wanted them to reunite.
I'm with you. You wouldn't be able to. Unfortunately, Glenn Hughes died of lung cancer I think 2000 or something like that.
Yeah. I believe he's the only one that passed, right?
I believe so. But both, I think Henri Bellolo and Jacques Morelli are both dead. I think Jacques died of AIDS, sadly. And Henri Bellolo died in like the late 2010s, I think. I'm not sure of what. But yeah, so there are some Village People out there still. You can go see them touring. You can see the Victor Willis version at the San Diego County Fair on July 4th. And if you happen to be in Santiago, Chile or Bogota, Colombia, you can see them in May.
All right.
Okay. So that's your assignment, Steph, you should know, Army. Go out and see the Village People and let us know what you think. In the meantime, you can sit there and listen to listener mail.
Oh, interesting. I was trying to verify really quickly if they were all alive, because that's important.
Yeah, sure.
And I just saw here that, and this is real-time fact, everybody, Alex Bradley, supposedly that his brother was thought to be the Falling Man from the 9/11 building.
No way. Wow.
Who knows?
Man, that took a very strange turn here.
That did take, and I believe that you're right. I believe that Glenn Hughes is the only one who's passed away.
Gotcha.
But the rest of the guys are still trying to do stuff. Is it Randy Jones? He released a song in 2017 that reached number 42 on the Billboard Dance Club song chart. So that's not too bad.
Randy Jones was the cowboy.
Yeah, cowboy.
So you never answered. Which one did you identify with the most, or did you identify with them as a group?
I don't know. Like, identify is a weird word, because I didn't like identify as in like I think I'm one of those guys. But
sure.
Like, I think I thought that the biker was the coolest.
Uh-huh.
Because
well,
like
sure.
That leather man, that mustache and that chopper, like, right. I thought that was just the coolest thing ever.
Dig those chains.
Yeah, so I think definitely the biker, you know. I mean, that's the one who I drew with little round boobies.
I always saw them pretty much collectively, but if any of them stood out to me, it was probably the construction worker.
Yeah, you were always a blue-collar kind of guy.
Right. I think it was this Sherpa-lined jean jacket that always stood out to me, and then the mirror aviators.
It's those Toledo roots. Oh, yeah, the aviators.
That's right. Okay, now, everybody, it's time for listener mail, I think.
Well, I don't have a listener mail because I thought we could just talk a little bit about our upcoming live shows.
Oh, yeah, let's do that.
As just sort of an in-show announcement, because we are hitting the road. This is a very fun show that you put together. And we've been getting emails from parents like, hey, can my kids come? Kids are always welcome at our shows.
Sure.
It's a kid-friendly topic in that it's not, you know, not kid-friendly, but it's not about Barney the dinosaur, you know.
It's not terrifying, though. It's pretty funny. If you're cool with your kids hearing the S word occasionally, you're fine.
Yeah, yeah. We have a cuss word or two here and there, but it's not too bad. But we're going to be in Medford, Mass on May 29th, then D.C. on the 30th and New York on the 31st.
Mm-hmm.
Then this summer, we're going to hit the road in August on the 7th, 8th, and 9th to Chicago, Minneapolis, and Indianapolis for the first time.
Very nice.
And then we're going to wind it out in September on the 5th and 7th in Durham, North Carolina. And here in Atlanta, tickets are moving pretty good in most cities. But we really want to make sure this first leg gets close to sold out.
Yeah, for sure. We would love that. If you would like to come see us, we would love that too. And you can get all the info you need. You can get links to ticket sites and all that kind of stuff by going to our website, stuffyoushouldknow.com, clicking on the tour button. Or you can also go to our linktree.com/SYSK live, and it'll give you all the stuff you need to come see us. Because again, we would love that. Right, Chuck?
It's a good time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And in the meantime, if you want to get in touch with us via email, you can send it off to stuffpodcast@iheartradio.com.
Stuff You Should Know is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
Hey everybody, if you've been looking for love at first sight, it's closer than you think. It can be found at your local shelter. So, this June 7th to June 9th, join the Pedigree Adoption Drive, and the Pedigree brand will reimburse your dog adoption fees nationwide. Pedigree knows that bringing a dog into your home not only opens their heart, it can open yours too. Visit pedigree.com/adoption-drive to learn more and see full terms and conditions. Are you thirsty? Well, Richard's rainwater is caught clean before it even hits the ground. Richard's rainwater contains no chlorine, no forever chemicals, no microplastics, no nothing. Enjoy the smooth, clean taste of still rainwater or the cold pressured bubbles of sparkling rainwater. Just visit richardsrainwater.com to find a retailer near you. That's richardsrainwater.com. And for a coupon, text STUFF to 251-292-8887 and receive $2 off a 12-pack case of Richard's rainwater. Hey, if you haven't heard of Visible, well, now you have. They're the wireless carrier that's making wireless visible. It's in the name. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon as low as $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. Use promo code STUFF20 to receive $20 off your first month for listening to this podcast. Switch now at Visible.com. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com. The Visible monthly rate is $25 per month.